Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
What up, everybody? This is Kevin.
I'm John.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we're taking a long, hard look back at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Now, Schwarzenegger, you may know, is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of our most dearly beloved 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down to the nitty-gritty.
So this is the final chapter of our series on Total Recall.
Final round.
Help me catch up. Where are we? Where do we leave off?
Oh, my gosh. We left off with Quaid and Molina being strapped into recall chairs, being roughed up.
Okay.
Bolted in this time to be assimilated, as it were.
No doubt. They're like, yeah, they're wrestling.
Quaid has just been informed that he is, in fact, Hauser. He is best friends with Cohagen.
It broke his heart to hear this.
And that he has been a double agent the whole time.
Yeah, triple agent or quadruple agent. I've lost track. There's been so many twists and turns in this thing.
He's been at least a triple agent this whole time.
Yeah, the technicians, they're wrestling Quaid and Molina into these recall chairs where they're bolted in with these big ass shackles. That's when, like, Cohagen's telling Quaid, like, don't worry, man, you're going to like being Hauser. And Quaid's like, Hauser's an asshole. And he's like, no, he's not. He's a great guy. He's one of my best friends. He lives in my neighborhood. Nice. Like, sweetheart. Yeah, we go to whatever. We do cookouts together. He's like, he's got a big ass house. And he's got a Mercedes and pool. And he's like, and don't worry, you like Molina? That's cool. You can fuck her every night.
Oh, my God.
Because Molina's so going to be Hauser's sleazy babe.
It's so sleazy.
Who says babe?
I think Cohagen.
Cohagen says babe. Yeah, definitely. He's like, don't worry, she's going to be Hauser's babe.
He doesn't know anything about women. That's clearly.
Molina crushes it. She's like, I'll bust his balls. That's awesome. And then what?
Cohagen says, no, we're going to have you fixed.
Oh,
those are his words.
That's horrible.
And he essentially says, we are going to make you a sex slave housewife. And that's
just like a woman should be.
It is terrible.
It is awful.
It's worst.
If you couldn't hate Cohagen more.
Yeah.
Like, actually, you thought you couldn't hate him more. Then he gave you this line.
Exactly.
And then you're like, that's it. He's hit rock bottom. But then he takes that call from the guy who's like, hey, in 1 hour, all the people in Venusville are going to be dead.
Sector G is bottoming out. Residents will be dead in an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, fuck him.
He's like, it'll be a lesson to the rest of them.
Oh, my God.
Oh, this guy,
Jesus,
man.
Jesus, Cohagen.
He's a bad guy.
You're not wrong.
You want to argue with me on that point?
No. I mean, we could, but that'd take a whole other episode.
Okay.
We don't have time. There's no time.
So they're like, yeah, start the procedure, whatever, in full James Bond style. I'm going to leave now
and assume
that everything is fine.
But Richter, like a good number two, stands behind and says, is he going to remember
any of this? Oh, shit.
He says,
yeah.
Are you going to remember any of this? And they're like, nah. And he just decks him while he's strapped in
now,
the chair.
Now, he does set up the great line. He's like, oh, wait, I'm having a party at my house later on.
Cohagen invites
doctor. He's like, you know, remind Hauser and Molina to stop by the party afterwards. And then Richter turns and he's like, see you at the party, and chuckles, and they walk out.
Oh, my God.
Beautiful. He's
just absolute slime leaving the room.
So the procedure starts.
And it looks painful as shit.
Yeah, it doesn't take long, though, before, of course, Hauser rips his shackle free.
But I like the line from it. If you don't keep still, you'll end up psychotic.
Like, okay, fine. Like, okay. Yeah.
I'm going to do what I can to make that happen, guy.
Right. He rips his shackle, like, right off of the device, and it's got, like, a big metal pointy.
No, it's got, like, a 3-inch, like, ship bolt sticking out of it, which he just...
hits the dude right in the throat.
Lodges the dude like in the throat.
He yanks it out, I feel like, and there's like just blood spray everywhere. Just
jugular shredded.
That's pure Verhoeven style.
Then the next tech runs up and with that same metal cuff on, like dings that dude in the face and crushes his face.
A guy comes running at him with like some type of a pipe or a tube.
Well, by that time, he's sort of gotten free at that point. Mm-hmm.
He's unhooked his leg.
He's running up with some kind of implement, which he grabs and shoves at an angle all the way through the dude's head.
And the dude just kind of flails around with this thing sticking out both sides of his head.
I was like, wow.
Pretty gory. Whoa. I can only imagine the X-rated version.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. He frees Melina.
And she is immediately, instantaneously Team Quaid again.
Well, it was kind of like, at first he's like, are you okay? Are you still you? And she's like, I don't know, honey. What do you think? Like playing the part of the Stepford wife.
Right.
And then she's like, let's get the hell out of here. Of course she's Team Quaid. What? I mean, was she going to be mad at him?
Right.
Yeah, anyway. You
know, they don't have time to be mad at each other. We got to get out of here.
They got bigger fish to fry.
They level some dudes in the hall, grab their guns, jump on an elevator.
Yep.
And then we cut to a very interesting and unexpected scene.
It comes kind of out of nowhere almost.
Especially after the last like 15, 20 minutes of film, we see Cohagen and Richter in his office. Cohagen is like staring out at the surface of Mars. And Richter says,
obviously pushing him. Like, he's like, you got to make a decision.
Yeah. What does it seem?
I don't even know. We don't know. But he's like, all right, kill him. Like, I guess there's no incentive to keep.
Quaid/
Hauser alive.
He's like a liability at this point.
He'll be a brain damaged individual. Like, he could maybe switch back to being Quaid at any moment.
Right. Like, do you think that there was something cut here? Maybe.
I don't know, but it is weird that after all his big talk about how much he loves Hauser and Hauser's my best buddy and all that, that he's like, oh yeah, kill him, I guess
kill him.
Like, it's weird that you made that decision between the time they strapped him in the chair and now the time in your office, which is presumably a couple minutes later.
It's been 5 minutes ago.
Absolutely.
To which Richter responds, it's about goddamn time. Because Richter's been slathering for revenge this whole time.
Now, I will say that regardless of Cohagen's decision, like, I feel like he had real affection for Hauser.
No, I agree. I think that they were probably.
It was a hard decision, friends, I guess.
Like mentor and mentee.
He kicks over his goldfish tank.
And we see the poor goldfish lying on the floor, gasping for air.
Yeah. And then do we cut to Venusville at that point? Like, to show the people in Venusville?
We cut right back to Sector G with people acting like goldfish.
Exactly. That's symbolism. I don't know.
Parallelism.
Or very awkward.
Parallelism.
Heavy-handed parallelism.
I'm into it. It makes sense.
It works.
I feel bad for the
This
goldfish.
Is not an art house movie.
No, clearly.
And we got Quaid and Melina. They're running through the tunnel system. She seems like she wants to go to Sector G.
Yeah, they're about to split off.
And he's like, no, we need to go this way. And she's like, what? What's over there? And he's like, we got to get to the pyramid mine and turn on the machine.
We got to get to the reactor in the mines.
And she's like, well, these people are about to die. And he's like, yeah, this
is the way.
Turning on the machine is the only way to save
them. This is the best way to do it. This machine makes air. He says aliens built it. That's all we know for sure. And then they come to a dead end. Of the tunnel.
Did this tunnel used to keep going? Or
I think that he had a memory of it keeping going.
Or he knows it's just the right direction? I don't know.
No, well, because then what happens? But wait, one of the labyrinth drills turns on and there's fucking Benny.
He's going out of his way. Now he's doing more than he needs to do. I feel like he served his role. He's done what he was paid to do.
Quaid.
They didn't say, hey, wait in this tunnel with Quaid. A drill to kill Quaid and Melina just in case.
Benny's the name in case you forgot it.
Yeah. You remember me? Benny. Benny is the name. He is loving the fact. Why is he mad at Quaid?
I think he's just relishing the fact that he gets to finish it off, but no one is sure why.
Okay. Pretty much. He grabs Quaid.
Because he's doing that thing that you love where he is a villain to the core.
He enjoys it.
And he is enjoying his moment in the spotlight.
So he's going to run down Quaid and Melina.
With a giant drill
and
thing.
And Quaid, in what seems like a futile gesture, he grabs this little handheld drill.
Well, he knows his way around some power tools.
That's true. You've
already learned.
And he sort of comes to attack the big drill, but he's like drilling into that, like the hydraulic line.
Yeah, he drills into the hydraulic line, we guess. And sort, but he sort of disables the drill, not before it like it gets in a couple of nicks and scrapes on Melina.
Yeah. Clay. Once he like fully severs that hydraulic line, basically the drill stops drilling.
Yeah. And so
Benny can't figure out why it's not working.
He's like, I got to back this thing out, I guess. He like puts it in reverse or something to like back it up. And then Arnold runs around the side.
Yeah, he comes around the side. He gives some great lines. He's like, Benny, here. like, I guess, here, let me give you this drill. But he's, you know, he's going to give him the drill, all right.
No.
He's like drilling through the door.
Yeah.
I think, I can't even remember what Benny is protesting.
Benny is like sitting there like freaking out. I think there's like sparks and carnage happening inside the thing. And then he looks up and sees the drill like.
It's coming through the door.
Coming through the door.
And then Arnold hits him with another good one-liner. Screw you.
Woof, you guys.
That one didn't do it for you.
I feel like Arnold goes to screenwriters at the beginning of the process of these things. And he's like.
How many?
More one-liners.
How many good lines after like, or before a kill
script and I only had two one-liners. I really need another
I need to before I put a drill through somebody. I like to give them a sick burn also,
because that's probably like his third or fourth.
Yeah.
Maybe counting his insults of people's physical deformities.
Oh, that's rough. but thankfully Benny with the big drill had knocked enough of a hole in the wall.
And this is how we know that he feels like he was going the right direction, because he says, I knew it.
Okay.
He says, I knew it.
And then they enter the huge chamber where the machine is.
So Cohagen must have blocked that end of the tunnel, presumably.
Yeah.
So that
obviously,
he got down there. I knew it. And yeah, we're like, yeah, we know you knew it. We had every faith that you did, even though we can't trust anything you remember at this point.
No.
And then we get some exposition about the machine.
He explains like the core of the planet is ice.
It's a glacier.
If we activate this thing, it's going to sublimate the ice, is going to turn it straight into gas, and it's going to provide oxygen for the planet.
We know the reactor is made of pure
turbinium. Yeah,
it's going to heat up, we suppose, melt the core and provide oxygen for the whole planet. Cohagen the bastard wouldn't turn it on.
Then they're like, well, hurry, the people of Sector G only have a few minutes. And then they slowly walk off.
Do, just rolling across the catwalk.
Now, as they're sort of working their way, I guess, to the control center of the machine.
Right.
Richter and like an army of goons show up.
Just like he...
Right on cue.
You think you brought enough guys?
Like, yeah.
They all run in, and Quaid and Melina are just like loping around. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah. And then, so we see this like series of columns. Richter and soldiers are lying in wait for Quaid and Melina. And we get a bit of trickery.
Yeah. Here. Quaid walks out right into like the crossfire.
Right.
And they are all emptying their guns. And then I think Quaid goes to the ground.
Yeah, he does. He falls.
They like all stop shooting. Shot. And then he pops up and starts laughing.
Ha 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 ha.
And he sort of goes walking off. They're all confused as hell.
And it turns out that he more or less James Bonded them, because
oh, hell yeah.
It's a fucking hologram.
He had his hologram device he got earlier. I bet you forgot about that.
Oh, my God. And Quaid just steps out from around a column and, like, mows him down.
Yes.
Just mows these guys down.
Shoots them all up. He shoots down probably 20 guys right in that moment.
But then we get a little more trickery, because now these guys are not sure what's real. We get another laughing Arnold.
Yeah, we get a Quaid walks in among like three guys. And he's sort of, ha, 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 ha.
You think this is the real Quaid? It is.
Bad ass. And I'm thinking to myself, like, bad guys, just shoot the hologram. Like, you've got nothing to lose by shooting at the hologram.
You just make sure you've got no one behind
you.
But then as if on cue, two guys like mow each other down.
Yeah, they basically take everybody out. He tosses the hologram over to Melina. Yeah, she uses it to take some guys out.
That's right. They shoot her, but they shoot each other.
Now we get see Richter's like on the run, and Quaid chases him onto the elevator that's headed to the top.
That's right.
And they're fighting on the elevator a little bit. Richter gets a few good shots
in. This has been the showdown that's been building up since a couple of
ever like, since he porked what, his wife.
Scene. Well, yeah, exactly. since Ironside first came, and Quaid had just fled for the first time on Earth in El Paso. So this is elevator fight.
Yeah,
number two guy fight.
You're fighting the second best boss.
That's right. So Quaid just, I feel like he just kicks the shit out of Richter.
Richter got a few shots in, but yeah, he's no match for Quaid. I mean, look at Quaid. He's a beast.
I mean, do you not think that, I guess they're not trained the same.
Mm-hmm. He sort of seemed like he popped his shoulder almost out of socket or something with one move, and then he sort of chucks him off the edge of the elevator, but Richter's hanging on to the edge. He's
still able to hang on.
Quaid goes to sort of grab him, but I guess Richter gets a grab on him and sort of trying to pull him off the elevator. He's like, if I go, I'm taking you with me.
But then he looks up.
Oh, man.
To see his doom approaching.
Yeah, and Quaid, yeah, they can see that basically whatever's not in this elevator is about to be severed, I guess. So he pulls.
I love it. He grabs both
arms. He pulls Richter's arms back in. They come to the edge of the thing, and it just like severs Richter's arms. Poor screaming Richter's like falling into the abyss. Arnold's holding his two severed arms. He leans over the edge of the elevator and he says, "See you at the potty, Richter." Oh my God. Ooh. My favorite.
Actually, that one's okay.
That's my favorite burn, dude.
Yeah.
Is
that line your go robo for this movie?
Yeah. See you at the potty, Richter. Oh, dude. Brutal. Imagine you're Richter. You're still falling to your death. You're missing two arms. And then you hear that.
Yeah, to add insult to injury.
I feel like Arnold chucked the two arms down well.
Just yeah, dude. I love it. I love it because you love it so much.
See you at the potty, Richter. Oh, it's like such a great callback to such a innocuous line.
It is. Yeah, and when that happened relatively recently, it's like he's been stewing over.
Oh,
it.
He's like, I can't believe he tried to say "see me at the party." Oh,
what
man.
An asshole!
When I kill him, that's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, he's been planning this for minutes, for literally like 10 minutes, only 10
yes.
minutes. So Quaid makes it all the way up.
Yeah,
and he's in the central control room, and we see the weird alien hand,
Just like from his vision.
Yeah, we see the alien shaped handed indention in the middle of the thing. But who's there but Cohagen?
Yep, Cohagen. I don't know. It's, I guess
son of a
makes bitch, sense that Cohagen. He's here, but he's like set up a bomb on the thing, and he's like, we can't. He seems to truly believe that like sort of this panicky. Device is gonna maybe kill everybody.
He's like, I'm telling you now, if you do this, we're all going to.
It's gonna be like planetary meltdown,
right? And so he's like, fuck it, I'm gonna kill you, and I'm gonna blow this thing up, and that's gonna be and I'll be home in time for cornflakes.
Like, is that your dinner? Well, how are you living, Cohagen?
Well, I mean,
Cohagen, you're like the richest dude on the planet, and you're gonna go home and have a bowl of cornflakes, but to each his own.
Cornflake, maybe he cuts up some fruit in there.
So maybe Melina,
sprinkle some sugar on top.
Now Melina, just in the nick of time, arrives at the top as well. How did she get there?
I'm concerned. Have you never eaten cereal for dinner?
I probably have, but I'm also not the richest man on Mars.
The most powerful man in the universe. He has said himself.
Yeah.
He also says, I'm the most powerful man in the universe. I can do whatever the fuck I want
including,
but not limited
to cornflakes for dinner.
He should have said that earlier. I eat cornflakes for dinner every night if I want
to. He should have had a box of cornflakes sitting on his desk.
Just, he has an unreasonable love of cornflakes. It's just like, he's obsessed with cornflakes.
So thankfully, to get us off the cornflakes topic, Melina arrives at the top. Did she catch another elevator?
She caught another elevator up.
Okay. All right.
There was another elevator. She had to wait for a different service to come get her.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And
just
she
in time to shoot Cohagen.
Just in the nick of time.
Right.
But he triggers the bomb anyway.
That's right.
And Quaid grabs the bomb and he chucks it down a tunnel.
Yeah, I assume that, I guess it's gone down like one of the columns, maybe it's a mine shaft because it does go down.
I think it just makes it where they're no longer. It opens a hole up to the surface somewhere.
Yeah, somehow.
Because it turns into a vacuum again. Right.
That's true.
So yeah.
we are close enough for them to have ruptured something to where they get sucked out and thrown onto the surface. I'm trying to think about the way that computes. I guess they just got sucked out through the side of the mountain or something.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, okay.
Everyone's holding on for dear life.
Right.
Cohagen and Schwarzenegger, Quaid, right. wind up like side by side, and he's trying to reach his hand to the device.
Right.
And Cohagen's still like pleading with him. Don't do it. You're going to kill us all.
And Cohagen's got that weird like tongue thing happening where it's like.
So at this point, if he's still arguing, like, don't turn the machine on.
Yeah.
I'm thinking he actually does believe
he's
that
legitimately afraid that Mars is just going to explode and they're all going to die.
Exactly. So Arnold, he takes his hand and he flings him off.
He's like, down. Okay, I'll take my chances later, Cohagen.
Right, so he tosses him. Cohagen gets sucked out into the Mars, like, mountainside.
Tumbling down the Martian.
And is immediately, like suffocating, and his eyes are starting to bug out and all that.
Ooh,
like, just what we saw in the opening scene to the movie.
It looks like a rough way to die.
Absolutely.
And we see Quaid reaching, activate.
Turns on the machine. And then both he and Melina, I think, in that moment, get sucked out as well.
The green light means on, and the machine cranks.
Yeah,
you hear
that comes to life.
That would have been awesome.
It would have been a total bummer if it just didn't work.
It would have been awesome if it made the Millennium Falcon noise.
So we got Quaid and Melina get sucked out, though, they start freaking out.
Well, but I think the machine turns on, and then
we
cut back to Cohagen dying in excruciating
death. Oh, my gosh, his eyes have fully popped out.
They keep cutting back, and... like back and forth from the machine, then Quaid and Melina get sucked out, then back to Cohagen. And by the third time they've cut back to Cohagen, it's like his skin has stretched. He looks like his head is
about to explode fully. Yeah.
But the eyes come out and you see like the optic nerve like attached to them.
Yeah.
Like they fully distended from the skull or extended from
it's
the skull.
Totally awful. So we know if this machine's not working, that's going to be Quaid and Melina in a matter of seconds.
I have as vivid memories of that as I do of the Nazis turning to mush in Raiders.
Really?
And as of Donovan sort of
decaying
at the end of Last Crusade. It's that same kind of movie magic. I love that.
You love seeing the baddie go in a horrible way. In
dramatic fashion like that.
I like it.
But then we see the same thing is starting to happen to our hero and heroine.
And now we do have gas or oxygen billowing out of the mountain.
Yeah, we see, but I love the mechanics of the machine. We see the things heating up, like heating up as they're lowering, and then that contact
they
with
dump
the
into
ice.
The ice, yeah. And it's just like instantly steam.
Yeah, just start shooting out of oxygen geysers shooting out onto the surface.
Now it comes down the mountainside. It hits all the various areas of Mars City or whatever this is, and like breaks the domes.
Yeah, the dome has been shattered. You can see everyone's in a big panic in all the sectors. It's a lot of glass to be broken for people to not have just been ripped to shreds during this whole
scene. I thought the same when the glass was flying. I'm like, how many people just got like horribly cut?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's saved. It's for the greater good.
That's right.
What if the machine just like Cohagen thought just really had killed everybody? That'd be a hell of an ending.
Yeah, it would have been. And you sort of.
The
like,
end.
But the thing is that like. Quaid's in such agony, he wouldn't even know it, right?
He wouldn't mind.
He wouldn't even know it. And then, the dome's getting broken open. No one appears to have been killed by glass. We see a never-ending story type effect right above the mine.
Like clouds are starting to form in the sky.
Yeah, like oxygen swirling in the sky. And
the people of Venusville are saved.
That's right.
They start to breathe. They all start to sort of revive.
Yeah, Mars suddenly has an atmosphere.
And the sky turns blue. It's kind of awesome.
I kind of love that. Yeah, I do love it. And so you see people sort of taking their first steps out into a bigger world.
Yeah, it's awesome. You've just taken your first step into a larger world.
Just taking your first step into a much larger world. and then we get Quaid and Melina at the top of the hill against what is definitely fake.
It's really like blue screen, green screen, whatever.
And I'm wondering, because you and I, we talked about this, like, why didn't they shoot that in a real environment?
Go to Utah or somewhere.
Or
Arizona and shoot it.
But then they exchange this kiss.
Well, so Quaid says, I just had the worst thought, like, what if this is all just a dream?
Oh, shit.
And she's like, well, you better kiss me quick before you wake up. And they go for that sweet kiss. And there's like a strange lens flare and like the sort of twinkling music that is dreamlike.
Yeah.
And then it's a fade to white, not black, for whatever difference that makes.
Which I always just was like, the sun's shining brighter on Mars.
Yeah.
That's the end of the movie.
I mean, I know Verhoeven is on record as saying in his mind, the whole thing is a dream. That Quaid never left Recall.
Right.
And that fade to white is like him being lobotomized.
And it was at that point, ladies and gentlemen, that this movie took a whole different turn for me. I was like, what the fuck? And so that makes...
So
like,
you always just took it at face value.
I did. But then that sort of makes me think that maybe you don't shoot that last scene against a backdrop because you don't want it to look real. You kind of want it to look like... You kind of want it to look...
Well, I used to always be fully on board that it was real, but then the more I've been watching it and thinking about it, there's just so many things that happen that are exactly the way a cheesy story would be laid out. Like just when you need help, the phone rings and there's help there. Or just when you're
about it is so
you get to the hotel and convenient. All you've got is a flyer for the thing. It's like the way a cheesy those mystery dinner games are played. Yes,
exactly. It is. And when you look at it in that context, all of those things immediately become a lot more clear.
And the fact that on multiple occasions, people would predict exactly what was going to happen the rest of the way.
So then, all right.
You don't have to agree with me.
No, I'm just saying. So then do you think that the whole scene with Edgemar and Lori?
I think that was legit. Like, I think they were really at recall trying to bring him out. And he chose to stay in the dream. And honestly, staying in that reality for him seems like a better choice, even if it is a dream, than going back to his life with Sharon Stone if he wasn't happy.
Yeah. So you think that Sharon Stone was some poor schmo Quaid's like real wife?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd go back to Sharon Stone, I think, if it was me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, you could always come out and be like, I have something to tell you. I'm into brunettes.
So color your hair, Sharon.
She'd be an attractive brunette.
She'd be an attractive anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's incredible. But no, I think reasonable minds can differ on it. Cause
no, I think that it makes complete sense.
I might flip back to thinking it's all real again with a few more watches.
Yeah.
I think the movie walks that line so well.
I think that it makes total sense the way it is because, again, we come back to so much of the dialogue that was written that is so great. Of course, Arnold says so many of those one-liners because wouldn't you want to keep saying ridiculously cool shit in your dream? Like everything that I say is hysterical. Everything that I say is like some motion picture like, one-liner.
What have you been feeding this thing? Blondes. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah. He's got a line ready to go for any situation.
It's almost like you kind of half expect everyone to turn around and look at the camera and go, oh yeah.
Yeah. I think Verhoeven says in his mind, everything up until he goes in the recall chair and builds the woman and starts to drift off. That is real.
Right.
And then everything after that, the whole freak out at recall, everything on is the ego trip fantasy merging into like the schizoid embolism. You know, you can make what you want of it.
It's totally a Blade Runner ending. And that makes me want to read the story.
Yeah,
so
I think the story is not very much at all like the movie.
No, but I'm wondering if just the ending of it is where you're sort of left to think, is anything that happened real or did it all happen to that guy?
This movie is pretty incredible. It's super ambitious.
Yeah, I would say so. I remember when it first came out.
It was like a passion project for Arnold. Like apparently they say the script had been sort of bouncing around Hollywood for like a decade. And it was one of these that was considered like, this is going to be really hard to make. Like it's a big budget movie. It's going to require a lot of money to realize it. But no one wanted Arnold. Like it was Dino De Laurentiis owned it for the longest time. And he kept trying to do it. Apparently he tried to make the movie with Richard Dreyfuss in the role, in the Quaid role,
interesting,
with Jeff Bridges, Patrick Swayze, Matthew Broderick, like that in that version of the script, the Quaid character was like an accountant.
Right.
And he was just very bored with his boring life.
So I wonder if that's more like lined up with the book.
They said it was going to, probably yes. And just that he was going to be sort of a milquetoast.
Right.
Like ineffective guy,
right,
who goes into, you know, and then it was going to be more like a mystery than an action film, which could have also been good.
Yeah, I think
I never saw the remake of Total Recall. Did you, the Colin Farrell?
I did not. I'm interested now to see it, to see.
I wonder if they went the action route or more the cerebral route.
Yeah, if it's more like a Blade Runner thing than it is like the action adventure movie.
I tend to try to avoid movies that I feel like are gonna take some of the luster off of things that I really liked growing up.
My only question would be, do they make more of like that aspect of it? And also, I'm also thinking, like, what if Verhoeven had just been like, he decided to end it with a lobotomized Schwarzenegger being wheeled into some
room. Oh, that would have been like the Raiders of the Lost Ark ending.
Yeah, exactly. Like wheeling him into a room full of comatose people.
Oh, man, that'd be pretty sweet, actually.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing if they had shot that to see it as a deleted scene.
I was just thinking, like, or just wheeled into a room in a chair.
Dudes are like in formaldehyde jars or something.
No, just as a vegetable.
Yeah.
He's just sitting in there. That's
brutal.
With Sharon Stone just holding his hand.
But I guess the story is like that. So Dino De Laurentiis owned the rights. He had the script, but he couldn't get it off the ground and his company was in trouble.
Right.
And Arnold, who had a relationship with Dino from the Conan movies.
Right.
Says, you know, he goes to this Caralco company and says, hey, buy, you know, see if he'll sell the Total Recall rights to you. They did. And Arnold wanted it to be a vehicle for himself. He handpicked Verhoeven to direct it. Like,
as you do, I would.
And it's a brilliant, like, Arnold, he doesn't register as like the most intelligent guy, but he's clearly a very intelligent dude. It's just the accent and the bulkiness of him.
If you read his, like, any of his biography material, like talking about how he was a millionaire. He was a millionaire through his own business savvy before he was a millionaire from his movie earnings.
Yeah. He made something of himself and he knew. Yeah. He's the
American dream.
He came from wherever he came from. Right. Austria, a military brat to the governor of the richest state in the richest country. It's a wild story.
By way of being
you wouldn't believe the story if someone pitched you that.
No.
You're like, yeah, they're going to elect this immigrant to be their governor,
mm-hmm.
who's also just a big action movie star.
So I want to.
Oh, wait. And a Republican in a blue state.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the budget for this. It was $65 million. Mm. Right.
OK, that's hella expensive.
And grossed $119 million in the U.S.
Mm-hmm, pretty good.
And $142 worldwide.
Yeah. So it was a big moneymaker. It really catapulted Arnold to greater heights of
just thinking.
It got him off of like the Commando and Red Heat and into like big budget blockbusters.
Yeah, I think he showed more range. I think even in this one, he shows some like
humor
chops. Yeah.
Yeah.
He shows the ability to hang with some heavies, like some well-recognized actors like mm-hmm. Sharon Stone, Ronnie Cox.
I think, this is one of his better parts, one of his better roles. He's incredible for me in this.
And he looks great. He wears the hell out of like the role. He just plays the role well.
Yeah. No, I can't get over the fact that he's like handpicked this, that he recognized this would be a good vehicle for him.
Right.
And he sort of pulled all of the strings that he could pull and he made it happen for himself. Like in today's world, he'd probably also have been an executive producer on the thing. It sounds like he did all the things that a producer does, which is just making shit happen.
Right.
But you know, in that era, I don't think he had enough clout to say, I also want to be a producer.
Good for Arnold.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's awesome. This led to even bigger and better things for him in his
talk
career.
About somebody that just willed his destiny. He said, I'm going to make this happen. And watch me do it.
Yeah, no one can stop me. And that's why he is the icon.
That's right. The icon of the genre.
Dude, it's been a ton of fun going through this with you.
This has been.
It's been a ton of fun visiting you here in steamy, humid Houston.
Oh, my God. Well, and the next time I'll visit you in Atlanta.
Yeah, we'll go.
Stopping grounds.
Yeah.
We'll go do a tomahawk chop. The Braves are in town. Two dice.
I love it. All right. We will be back with something else fresh for you soon. And thanks for listening.
Thanks for hanging in with us, you guys.
Check us out.
If you guys like Total Recall.
Yeah. We'll be around with the Facebook, the Twitters and the Instagrams, I suppose.
That's right.
Check us out. We should record a more upbeat ending as well. We'll be back, guys.
We'll be back.
Check it out. All right. It's been real. High five.
High five, brother.